Welcome to PCMC Pop Culture, Man, Children. I'm your host, Mike Buongiorno. I'm here all the darn time. We come out every Wednesday. We're your one-stop shop for not toxic fandom. Do we like everything? Are we a podcast that just likes everything we talk about? No, we have discerning tastes. But when I say non-toxic, I mean we don't hate things just because there's like minorities in them. If we hate on something, it's because it's actually bad. We come out every single Wednesday. We have since the dawn of time, and we always will.
Yes, over 10
on Wednesday, the Lord made PCMC. I'm here today. That was the voice of Mr. Vin Forte.
Hey,
how you doing, Vincent?
Good. What's going on?
We're here today to talk about Press Your Luck and the Press Your Luck. Really, we're here to talk about the Press Your Luck scandal that rocked network television. Vin, you brought this to my attention. How did the Press Your Luck scandal affect your life?
It didn't. I wasn't born yet.
Okay. So where'd you hear about this?
No, this was like a known thing. I loved Press Your Luck growing up. I remember seeing it in reruns on, I think it was USA or TNN, the Nashville network, for people who don't remember that.
Oh.
They used to have like a block of game shows where it was that, Name That Tune and Trivial Pursuit were the three I remember.
Okay. Yeah. Trivial Pursuit. I forgot about that one.
Hosted by Wink Martindale.
Yeah.
And Press Your Luck, for those who don't, first off, if you haven't heard of Press Your Luck, go on YouTube and watch an episode of Press Your Luck. It's so much fun. The big deal of Press Your Luck, well, there are a couple things that were notable. So it's basically this show where there is broken up into two rounds.
Yeah.
So the first round, you ostensibly answer questions, and that gives you spins or like presses.
Yeah, you win spins.
And there's like the whole thing is there's a big board, this big colorful board that's like a big square that has like prizes on it, like all these squares on a almost like a board game board, but like upside.
So you know what I think of it as? You know that carnival game where it's like it goes around in a circle and you hit it, you have to like try to hit it at the right thing?
Yes.
It's a little bit like that.
It is a little bit like that.
Ostensibly, you're supposed to be. I mean, it's not like they say it's random, but also like if it were random, why not just have you open a curtain? Like the fact that you hit something to stop it, built into it is the idea that like there you could possibly see what you want and get it if you're fast enough.
Yeah. And like basically you would hit the button and it would stop on either like money or like, oh, a vacation to the Bahamas or whatever. And that would get added to your money total. And there were spins that you had that you earned, but then you could also pass your remaining spins to someone else. And that means that, like, let's say I have four spins. I take two of my own and I go, well, I'm going to pass two to Mike. Now you have to take those two spins before you take yours, forcing you to do it. And the reason that's important, the main crux of the show is the whammies.
So
the whole thing of the show, that's why whenever, like, every clip of it, people, like, when they're about to hit the big bucks, no whammies.
Yeah.
No whammies. And like, if you hit a whammy, you lose all your money.
Everything. You're down to zero.
And there's like this like animation of like the whammies, like these red, like little devil creatures that like come across the screen.
Like, yeah, they come out and like fuck your wife or like it's that energy. It's like Zonks in, let's take a deal. Like, here comes the whammy. He farted at a funeral. And it's like a little, it's like he's like a little, like really early, like CG, not CG, like, well, computer
like
generated.
Genuine animation.
Yeah, that's like, I'm a whammy.
And it's like genuinely really charming and fun. And the other big thing for our purposes is that it was the one game show at that time where you could like really win some money. This show, like, because you had the big board aspect and you could like rack up, like, I got a vacation, then I got like some jewelry, then I got $15,000 cash. Like,
you could rack up
big money really quick. So people would regularly go home with like, you know, like $5,000, $8,000, $15,000 on like the high end, like $20,000. Like $20,000 was like huge money back
then. Yeah.
People were regularly winning that.
Yeah.
So then the scandal.
But wait, before we get to that, I want to talk about The one of the things that's I think interesting about it as a game show is that it really, more than like almost any other game show I could think of, it really promotes a gambler's mindset.
Yes, because, like, I'm going to keep going until...
Right, that's why it's called press your luck. Because it's like, okay, you won some money, right? Let's say you just won $5,000. Now, it'll be like $5,000 and another spin. Like, you keep winning spins. So you could say, okay, I could walk away. I could give the rest of my spins. That's why you give spins away, right? Because you're free of getting whammy. In the beginning, you want spins because it's a chance to make money. But then once you've got money, you want to protect it by not taking spins because every time you take a spin, you have a chance of whammying. And whammying doesn't take off just the last thing you made. Whammying takes everything off. So everything's all in. It's all
also if you hit three whammy. Also, if you hit three whammies, you're just out of the game completely.
Yeah, you're just done. So like, it's really got this gambler's mentality of like, okay, you just won $1,000. You can walk away now and give your spins to anyone else, or you could get more money.
Now, had you watched Press Your Luck? Because I think, like you said, like you had naturally never seen it.
I can't remember. I feel like I have. Well, there were three versions of Press Your Luck. The original one ran for four seasons on CBS from 1983 to 1986. That's this one. And it's hosted by Peter Tamarkin. And then there was a remake. Oh, sorry. The original one was actually a remake of a concept from 1977. But then from 2002, 2003, the Game Show Network brought it back. And they called it Whammy, the all-new Press Your Luck. But yeah. Then from 2019 to now, there's one hosted by Elizabeth Banks. And that's actually been on the longest.
Yeah, that's the one ABC, like, I don't know, like 7 years ago or whatever, started this thing where, like, in the summertime, I guess now throughout the year, they do these, like, game show weeks.
Yeah.
And I guess, like, Press Your Luck has become, like, sort of the breakout of that.
Yeah, it is a fun game. It's simple enough. You can kind of play along at home. It's I think it's a very fun game. Are you a big game show fan?
I love game shows growing up. Like, I love when I discovered the Game Show Network, I was like, oh, this is like the toy store for me.
What do you think is your favorite game show?
Press Your Luck, I would say, actually is up there.
Okay.
Jeopardy is the classic. You can't really beat Jeopardy for the type of game show it is. Honestly, like, never a big Wheel of Fortune. I don't know.
Me neither. Wheel of Fortune bores me.
It's a little boring.
Yeah. You know what I really like? I mean, it's people mock it, but I really always liked Deal or No Deal, especially because it was all gambling. It was big money, which is something that, like you were saying, like, used to not win a lot of money, but then with Who Wants to Be a Millionaire, they were like, what if we just give people tons of money? So
yeah,
Deal or No Deal was big money, but there was no skill involved. There was no strategy involved. There was no, you didn't have to answer any questions. It was entirely based on your nerve and your magical thinking and whether how much of a gambling addict you are, you know, like, I don't know. I always liked Deal or No Deal.
You know, I like the, like, Nickelodeon run of game shows.
Uh-huh, okay.
Like Nick Arcade, I used to really love.
Yeah.
Double Dare, I think, is probably one of my favorites.
Double Dare is fun because you've got, like, the physical aspect of it.
Yeah, I think a good game show needs, like, that mix of, like, you're playing the... It's sort of like you're eating your vegetables to have your candy. Like with Press Your Luck, it's like, okay, we're going to do, like, 5 minutes of a question and answer round.
Right.
That's in service of getting to the whammies and the high stakes.
Right. And that's much more interesting, the second part.
Yeah. And that's why I think, like, again, one of my favorites, I think one of all of our favorites, like, Price is Right. Like, that's why that's endured for so long, because it's just a bunch of mini games. Oh, you don't like this one game? Well, wait 3 minutes and there's going to be another one.
Yeah, I agree. Price is Right is good. Yeah. Okay. So.
But so now that everyone knows the general idea of Press Your Luck, and maybe you've even stopped the episode and gone and, like, check out some clips, here's, like, the real, like, meat that we want to get to. So there was a Press Your Luck scandal
Yes.
And if you want to know more about it, our sort of big source for this was a documentary that the Game Show Network did like 20 years ago on this. And it's very well made because they actually like weave in the actual episode.
Yeah, it's actually awesome because it's basically the episode, but with shit around it. Because they play the entirety of the episodes. So it's like, it's an hour and a half documentary. And there was two episodes that this thing, this event was happening. So it kind of gives you the entirety of it. It was called Big Bucks, the Pressure Luck Scandal from 2003.
Yeah, and the gist of the scandal was when Pressure Luck first started, the deal with the board was ostensibly, it's randomized, right? So you're going to hit it. You don't know where it's going to land. You're just looking at flashing lights. But this guy, this fucking like down on your luck, like ice cream truck driver in the middle of nowhere. This guy, Michael Larson, like classic, like kind of creepy guy, like kind of shady. Like they even talk about in the documentary, like the producers, like didn't even want to put him on the show because they're like, something's up with this guy.
Yeah. And one of the
One
of the co-contestants of those episodes was like, I found him very creepy.
Yeah, and you can tell there's like something going on with him when he.
Well, I want to dive deep into him, but
so the gist. So let's get the whole overview first. So he gets he is at home, unemployed, fucking ice cream truck driver, not making any money, and he discovers one day that there's a pattern to the lights, and he's like recording episodes, rewatching them. And he cracks the code and figures out that there's only like four or five patterns to the lights, and that he would literally sit at home and like stop it with his remote to like test like where it stops. And one day he just cracks it and he's like, I gotta go on the show. I'm gonna like, I cracked the code.
Yeah.
So he goes out to LA with like no money, gets like a suit from Goodwill, gets there like first thing in the morning in the line to be a potential contestant, to basically like make sure that like I'm getting on this show. Again, one of the producers like thinks there's something shady, but ultimately, like, I think they kind of upplay that a little bit. Whatever, he gets
on the feel show. Well, I actually don't believe as much as I enjoyed the documentary, I think that a lot of people like they didn't want to feel like they were fooled or that they were responsible for what happened. So
I had a feeling this whole time. Like,
I don't know if I believe that segment producer.
Yeah. But so he gets on the show and he actually hits a whammy the first go around.
Yeah.
He's a little too nervous. So you're thinking like, oh man, like, is this going to pan out the way he wants it to? And then from that point forward, he's just completely off to the races.
It's crazy.
He knows exactly where to hit. He's like, he gets up to like, $2,000, $5,000. Like, and again, he's not
keeps getting more spins too. So he could just keep going and going.
Yes,
and going.
Part of his plan. Yes, exactly. Part of his plan is he knows where to hit. So he knows when to hit like, $2,000 in a spin.
Yeah.
So he's just racking up spins, racking up money. And then at some point, this I do believe, like, the producers in the back were like, well, now something's up. Like, this so he keeps going. Eventually, like, he goes so far they can't even end the episode. So they have to, like, film it in two parts and come back tomorrow.
And then
he basically just keeps going and then eventually basically takes them for a ride to the tune of $110,000. Which, again, like, the highest amount on that show that anyone had won up to that point was like 15,000-20,000.
Yeah.
That's like the remainder of like what he got. Yeah. Like, he got over $100,000.
Yeah, the final figure is $110,237.
And then basically the last
and a few trips.
Trips and all this stuff. So the producers at that point are like, we don't want to give him the money. Like, we feel he cheated. But then it was like, well, it basically boiled down to like, well, we have to give him the money because if this ever went to a court, we would have to pay him out and we'd have to probably pay legal fees and do a bunch of other stuff.
Yeah.
Because he didn't cheat. Like, he beat their game. Like, he didn't cheat.
Right.
And then after that fact, I know I've been talking a while, I'll let you jump in right after this part, but like, after that fact, the producers like shut down for like a week and like reconfigured the board and like truly made it random so that could never happen again.
Right. They said that the patterns on the big board were random, but there was actually only five patterns. So this guy, Michael Larson, who, you know, the documentary that we watched kind of like, it makes him out to be like a scumbag. Like they
yeah,
talk
he
about
just seemed more down on his luck than anything. But
yeah,
really,
and, you know, they're like, oh, he was married and divorced twice and he had a common law wife. And then the common law wife has nothing good to say about him. They said that he would stack up TVs like and watch like five TVs at a time. This is the '80s. I mean, I say this without any malice or without any insult. I feel like Michael Larson is probably a person who's on the autism spectrum.
Yes.
Just the thing of him watching TVs like that. He, you know, they interview his brother in this documentary and he's like, he always wanted a get rich quick scheme. And it's like, I don't know. He couldn't fit in, whatever. But yeah, so he would just sit and watch TV. And like you said, he figured out the patterns. But you know what? That's fucking hard. Like, that's the thing. All right. So there's five patterns, right? And he noticed that there was five patterns. He also noticed that there are two squares on the board that never have whammies ever.
Yeah.
Which is, by the way, a huge fucking failure of the people who put it together.
Right.
Okay, so once he figured that out, right, it's a matter of how do I make sure I always get those squares? But then there's five patterns, and the patterns change. So there are times when you're watching the episodes where...
And he's just kind of waiting.
You could tell he's finding the pattern. That's what's interesting. The documentary is very good. They actually will slow things down in slow motion and be like, look at his look on his face when he does this. He also does something really interesting, which is, When you do a spin, you know, you have your hand over the buzzer and, you know, you'll go no whammy, no whammy, and then you'll hit it and then you'll react to whatever. He had both hands over the buzzer and he's like locked in. But instead of following, you know, like other people, you see them look at the board and their eyes moving. He's not. I think his method was to just look in the center and just feel the pattern on the periphery. Because if you look, his eyes are almost unfocused.
Yeah, that's interesting. I thought he was looking at, like okay, I'm going to look at these two spaces because I know that when the pattern comes around, it'll hit like this, then go here.
Oh, yes,
and that's
yes,
what I noticed.
Yes. And sometimes, I don't know if he's trying to find whatever pattern it is or he missed a loop. Because there's sometimes where he's waiting too long, where you're like, why isn't he hitting it? And you realize... later on you realize he lost it or he's waiting for it to go around again. I also think that first whammy, because he gets a whammy right out of the gate, I think he's testing the timing. I think that was like, okay, let me do this to figure out the timing. And then once he does that, it's a matter of, okay, now I'm off to the races. But as this documentary shows, this what he does isn't easy. It's not.
No, they.
It's
they
not guaranteed.
All his family and like at the end of the documentary, they have like a board that they bring out, like the original electronics with it and everything.
Yeah,
and they have like his family that they've been talking to, like all try to hit the pattern and they all fail.
Yeah, it's difficult. It's really difficult. They have some of the original two contestants that are with him. This woman Janie and this guy Ed. And she immediately whammies out. The guy can go for a little longer, but you got to think, the guy actually does rack up more supposed money than he did, but you also have to think there's no pressure on him because it's fake. Whereas, just imagine this. You've got, you know a pattern, but you have to hit it at the exact right time to hit the thing you want to hit. And every time you hit it, you make more money. But if you hit it just 1 second wrong, you can lose all that money.
Yeah.
That's a lot of pressure. And you could, one of the other contestant, Ed, goes like, I was watching him and he was sweating and I was worried about him. He seemed like he was like freaking out. I mean, that's the crazy thing. Like, you know, like it really is worth watching because he starts to win and then he's like, all right, keep going, keep spinning. And the Janie next to him, she's just bored. She's like, what the fuck is happening? But the host is like freaking out, but he seems to like, he can't keep up the energy.
Loving it.
Yeah, he is loving it, but after a while, he's like, I think, I don't know. After a while, I think they all
knew something was up. Because, I mean, he blew, like, I forget, like, they say, like, who the biggest winner was before him. And he quadrupled that. Like I said, baked into the game is this idea that, like, you could look and maybe get it. But also, you gotta think about this. He almost always gets the same box. He almost always gets the eighth box. So right off the bat, I'm sure they were like, fuck, he figured it out.
Yeah.
But let me ask you, like, this documentary, it kind of has it both ways. In the beginning, like, this guy's a scumbag, he's a fucking villain. Then by the end, they're like, ah, you know what, good for him. Do you think that this is cheating?
I don't think it's cheating, because he beat your system. It's you set up the rules. The rules are all you can do is hit that button. You can't, like, all you can do is hit the button.
Right. He has no, I feel like to cheat, right, you have to have information that the other contestants don't have, or some advantage that the other contestants don't have. He didn't have any of that.
They all could have been weirdos and watched the game beforehand and spent a million hours, like, figuring out the pattern, but he decided to do it.
Yeah, and like I said, what he did does take skill and nerve. And also, like, I feel no sympathy for fucking CBS. Who gives a shit? Like,
because
you took him for $110,000. Good.
Yeah, and another thing they kind of overplay is they make it seem like when they're talking about it happening in real time, like, oh my God, he's going to bankrupt CBS. It's like, no, he's not.
No, he's not. The way I feel about this is the way I feel about, like, when a genius goes to a casino and counts cards. Like, yes, if you're, like, counting cards where, like, you've got another guy on the other end of the room and he's giving you signals, like, that's cheating. But if I'm a fucking genius and I can just count cards, why do I get kicked out of the casino? I won. I'm just good at this. Yeah. I'm better at this. You know, like, that's what it was. Like, the fact that he memorized it, that doesn't make him bad. Because you know what? I think, again, he doesn't have any information that the other people don't have. And also, I could watch the show for a million years. I probably would not have figured out that pattern.
Yeah.
So it's something he's naturally good at.
And also, like, the thing that I always go back to is because, like, we take on the surface that, like, oh, yeah, he figured out there were five patterns. Like, A plus B equals C. He had to figure out that there's five patterns. So, like,
that's crazy. Yeah.
Like, that, like, really think about that. Like, you have to figure out that, like, there's a pattern going on, and then there's four more patterns going on at the same time.
Yeah. Yeah. And they can switch between the two, or between the six, or whatever, five or six it is. So when it does switch, he's got to be like, okay, they're doing this pattern now. And then still get his timing perfectly right. There's a point, it's actually hard to watch, even knowing what he's doing, it's still hard to watch, because at any moment he could get a whammy and lose it all, and he just keeps going and going, and the tension is so high. At one point, he gets to, I think, 107, he goes over 100, and by the way, the at first they can't even put it on the board, like the little thing in front of the podium that says the money, because no one's ever gotten that high. So for a second, like, it's not on the board, and then whoever, like, is running it takes the dollar mark out so they can fit in the 100. He at 107, he stops, and you can see he's, like, run through the ringer. He's, like, sweating, and he gives them to Janie. He gives his spins to Janie, and then at some point, you have to do the spins that are given to you, but you don't have to do the spins you acquire. So at some point, she gives them back to him, and you can see he's like, fuck! Like, he wanted to get off the,
like,
merry-go-round.
There's like one last boss that he has to get.
And he fucks one up. He does one, and he doesn't hit the box he wants. He hits, like, a cruise or something. And on the documentary, they slow it down, and you see he's disappointed in his face. He's like, you see he's kind of like, for a minute. Because what he wants is to hit the box he wants.
Yeah.
And also, they show, like, typically, people would hit it. There'd be a moment where they see what it was. They would read what they won, and then they'd celebrate. But he would hit it and celebrate almost instantly, because what he was celebrating was, I hit the box I wanted.
Yes, like, he would just be like, stop, yes! Like,
yeah, exactly. And, you know, they talk about all this behind the scenes. People say, like, and I don't know if this is true or not, but apparently, like, even from the very beginning of the show, some people were like, I don't know, is 6-2... too few? Should we do something else? And then someone had the idea, like, well, why don't we just make the blinking happen less? So the patterns, there's still six patterns, but they're blinking because they thought it would be harder to figure it out, but apparently it wasn't.
Yeah.
After he left, they added like 30 more patterns.
Yeah, which is what they probably should have done
right
in the beginning.
And now it's like computer, it's just actually random. But yeah, that was after he left. Yeah, I mean, we haven't talked about what he looks like. He's an interesting looking fellow as well, right?
He looks like, if you've ever seen Troll 2.
And I know you have grandpa, if you're listening to PCMC.
Yeah, come on, he looks like Grandpa Seth from Troll 2.
Yeah, you could tell by his jovial face that he's a younger guy, yet he's got a gray beard and gray hair. And he does have an everyman quality to him. Like, he, you know, in the little preamble, he's like you said, he's like, yeah, I bought this shirt from Goodwill for 15 cents. And I borrowed money to get her. He says, like, oh, yesterday was my daughter's birthday, but I couldn't get her anything.
Yeah, he's like, oh, I'll get her something now.
Yeah. So you're kind of like, this guy's odd, but you like him. And then when he starts winning, and you should say the audience is also going flipping out. The more he wins, the audience is absolutely flipping out.
If there's one thing people love, I've noticed, it's that it's not even just that, like, he's winning. It's they're seeing something they've never seen before in their lives.
It's a true, you know, it's a true TV event. Something really happened. It wasn't live. And in fact, CBS didn't want to air it. And then The producers were like, no, you got to air it. Because CBS was actually embarrassed by the whole thing. Because I think, you know, my guess would be the documentary makes it sound like there was a post-mortem and they figured out what happened.
Yeah.
But my guess would be by the fourth even spin that he hit the same box and won, they knew it. And they were probably like, fuck. And then they just watched him walk away with their money.
But also, it's like, just fucking lean into it. Like,
yes, they should have. Almost. They should have.
Because, like, for that $100,000, get a little promotion out of it. Like, a guy fucking beat Press Your Luck. Like,
I think talk the, about I think it. What they, yeah. I think what they were embarrassed about was that, look, if he had won a lot of money.
They feel like they got caught with their pants down.
Right. Like, he didn't just win a lot of money. He walked away with an insane amount of money. Even the average person at home must have been like, oh, something's wrong. Yeah. Something's up. I mean, even the fact that he keeps hitting the same square. Anyone would be like, oh, he figured out how to hit that. Even if you don't know how he did it, you would be like, oh, he figured out how to hit the same square. And that's what he's doing. Honestly, that's the, like I said before, that's the real fault. Even if six patterns or not, the fact that you didn't realize that on all the patterns, there are two squares that never have whammies, yeah, that's the real fucking failure. That's the real failure. And, you know, for a minute when I was watching it, I was like thinking, well, why doesn't he throw one so he can throw them off his scent? But he can't because of the way the game's played. Any right. whammy would lose everything. So he just had to keep going. And he could have walked away with less. If he had stopped at like 70,000, he still would have been way more than anyone ever won. And maybe he wouldn't have caught the attention of what he was doing. But the fact that he just kept going, I mean, when you watch it, it's crazy. I mean, the other contestants are just there like, what the fuck is happening? The woman is bored out of her mind. She's like, it's crazy.
I think he also knew that, like, what are they going to do?
Yeah.
What are they going to do? Like, they can't, if they want to sue me afterward, like, I think they even talk about it in the documentary. He's like, well, what are you going to,
right. They look, they were like, did he spell anything out wrong? Is he living, is there any way we could get him on a technicality? And they couldn't.
The part where they talk to the CBS, like, they talk to their lawyer and they interview the lawyer. And he's just like, there's no way we would even be able to take this to court because the judge would just be like,
yeah,
you fucked up. Like, it's your, he did nothing. Again, all he can do is press that button.
You
can't get insider information.
Right, exactly.
Fidget with...
All he did was watch the shows that you aired. You gave him all the information he has.
So if they took him to court, they would have had to pay out even more money. So it was just kind of like, we got to let him have
And they would have really looked like spoil sports.
Oh, absolutely. Oh, but that would have been like such terrible publicity. Like,
yeah,
guy wins your game show and then like you sue him. Like,
yeah.
Fucking...
Michael Larson had a little bit of a public comeback in the 90s because the movie Quiz Show came out, which was about an early scandal from the game 21, which was kind of based on 21 questions. And if you've ever seen the movie quiz show, or you could actually watch the episodes online, they're very interesting. Basically, they would just give, it was just fake. Like, yeah. When they, it was the kind of show like Jeopardy where if you won, you'd stay on for episodes. So when the ratings were doing well, they took that as, well, people like this contestant. This contestant's a star. And even if you got there on your own, once you were winning, they would keep you winning by giving you the answers. And they would even like fake acting. They'd be, you know, they'd be like, Charles Van Doren is one of the people who, he's who the movie's mostly about. And he was like the son of an academic. He himself was like a associate professor. He was a historian. So like, you know, people like looked up to him a little bit. He ruined his academic career when it came out. But you even see him, like, if you watch the video, he'll hit his brow and be like, oh, and like pretend to not know the answer. Yeah. So anyway, when that movie came out, it was, I think it won an Oscar. It was a big deal and people were interested in this idea again. So I think Good Morning America found Michael Larson and interviewed him. And it's interesting because he seemed so excited to talk about what he did. Like, when you look at that interview, he's like, oh, this is what I did. This is what I studied. This is how I did it. He really saw it as like this great achievement in his life, which, you know what? If I said, Vin, here's the game. This thing has a pattern and you have to always make it hit this one thing and you can never fuck up. You fuck up even once, it's over for you. You would not be able to do it.
No.
The fact that he does it and he keeps doing it and he stays in the zone and he just lets it pile on and on and on. And, you know, knowing that whether what he knows or not, like, I could fuck up my timing and hit a whammy and that's it. I would be known as losing the most money anyone ever lost on this show.
Right. And then didn't he try, I think the documentary said that, like, he tried going on other game shows after.
Well, he was a weird, okay, so he wasted a lot of his money on other schemes. He tried to, like, do some scheme where there was some radio show that gave out some random number, and it was like, if you could find a dollar bill with this serial code we just gave out, we give you $60,000.
Oh, yeah. Cashed in like a lot of that money.
Yeah, in one. Yeah, and he made his common law wife, which is like, I don't know, common law. Does that mean you just live with somebody long enough?
I mean, if you live with someone long enough, like you're
basically married.
Married.
But yeah. And she was like, yeah, he made me fucking look at $1 bills. Like, she has nothing nice to say about him.
Yeah.
And then at one point he was robbed. A good majority of the money he won, like around like $50,000, $60,000, was stolen from him.
Because he just kept the money.
He kept it in his house. And somebody probably fucking heard about it. He probably talked about it. And somebody was like, oh, this guy has this shit in his fucking... It's like what you see in The Sopranos. Like, this idiot has this shit in his living room. Let's just take it. And then he blamed his common law wife, and then they broke up, and he had a whole weird...
Maybe he ran away. All out in ones.
And then from some others... Oh, then he got himself involved in a telemarketing scheme.
Yes.
And he had a warrant out for his arrest, and he fled to Florida, and I don't know how he stayed on the radar there, but he, you know, when he died, he was a wanted man, so he did have a weird fucking life.
Yeah, he didn't like kill anyone or do anything. Like,
he didn't want to work
super bad,
he didn't want to work.
He was one of those like classic American.
He was a Ralph Cramden.
He was one of those like classic American like underdog losers.
It's
like, you're not a great person, but like,
you didn't really hurt anybody.
You didn't really hurt anyone, and you're just trying to like, you're trying to do what we all do from time. Like, everyone tries to get an edge somewhere, but like, this guy took it to such an insane. Like, he's one of the guys that like actually committed to it. Like, no, I'm gonna look at this game show and like film all the episodes, buy a bunch of, you know, get a bunch of TVs and watch it. And then, like, go out and actually do it.
Yeah. And you know what? God bless them.
And they made a movie about him. Like,
have you seen it?
Last year. I have not. It stars Paul Walterhauser.
Which is Michael Larson. Perfect casting. Of course it's him. Yeah.
So it's a big enough situation that, like, they made a movie about
it. It's called The Luckiest Man in the World.
Yeah.
Yeah. Was it a Netflix movie, I think?
I don't know if it was Netflix. but it came out very recently. It came out like last year or the year
before. Yeah. I've read some reviews. They seem mixed. Some people say like it's not enough to really make a movie out of. Some people apparently like the movie tries to like make the whole thing a metaphor for the underdog in capitalism, which I'm for. You know what I mean? Fuck CBS. So you lost $110,000. First of all, after taxes, what does he really bring home? 70,000 maybe?
Yeah, right.
Like, I mean, it's almost like half what you pay for prizes and shit.
This cast is, I kind of want to see this now.
Like, yeah, the
fucking Walton Goggins plays Peter Tamarkin.
Like, I know, isn't that crazy? Yeah, I do want to see it now.
Patty Harrison is the woman.
That's hilarious. That's hilarious. Love Patty Harrison. These tables are so dirty. You don't know how to treat Freddy Krueger. You don't know how to treat the Crypt Keeper.
Johnny Knoxville's in it. Like, this is a wild cast.
Yeah, I've also heard like it's not quite a comedy, but it also is too funny. I don't know. I didn't want to check it out before we recorded because I didn't want it to taint my viewing of it. I would say find the episodes on YouTube. You can find them very easily, or watch this documentary. But it's definitely worth watching. Knowing what we've just told you about how he did it, watch it. It is really interesting.
One more note on the movie. Apparently, this movie has been in production hell for like 20 years.
Wow. And
the film was originally announced in August of the year 2000. I'm going to give you three guesses as to who was supposed to play, who was lined up to play Michael Larson.
Robin Williams.
No.
Tim Allen.
Nope.
Tom Hanks.
Bill Murray.
Bill Murray. Okay. Okay, just from saying that, I kind of can see what the movie's going to be. It was going to be like a comedy, which I guess it is.
This is completely unrelated, but I just came up with Wikipedia. I feel like it's a question I never get to throw in, but I really want to know what you think about this.
Sure.
So I'm reading a review here of like, you know, Joe So-and-so from RogerEbert.com. How do you feel about like people still using the Roger Ebert name?
I don't like it.
I don't like it either.
It's weird. Like, obviously, RogerEbert.com persists, and I guess they have critics over there, but it's just weird. Yeah.
I would rather be like, oh, he founded this website when he was still alive, and, like, he wanted it to be a home for, like, good film criticism, and it's like, you know, Roger Ebert presents CriticsCorner.com or something.
But is it? I don't know a single critic that writes for fucking RogerEbert.com that I would give a shit about.
I don't either. I don't, like... I wonder if that's because a lot of people just feel like us, where it's like, I don't care that it's RogerEbert.com because you're not Roger Ebert.
I tell you what, though, if you're interested in Roger Ebert and Gene Siskel, me and Vin did an episode of PCMC on Siskel and Ebert. Yeah. That's pretty fucking awesome. We really get into it and some of the cool reviews they did. I've got a question for you. You're a fan of the comedian Jimmy Pardo and his podcast, Never Not Funny. He's done a lot of game show hosting. He has this gripe that he talks a lot about where he really hates that currently they'll hire like a movie star to be a game show host rather than
Elizabeth Banks
or fucking they had Alec Baldwin doing a Match Game.
Who the fuck wants that?
Right? Like, how do you feel about that?
I agree with him 100%. It's the same thing that and I agree with them as well, that voice actors have.
Yes.
Where they're like, you know, they want to hire the big names, and I get it. Like, you want to throw a big name into the movie to sell it. Does it have to all be big names?
Right.
Like, you have people who are uniquely skilled.
Yeah.
At being voice actors. Like, did you see, there's a clip going around from Jimmy Kimmel Live where he had on Kermit the Frog recently.
I was so unhappy about it.
Please. Tell me. I could pull the clip up right now. People need to hear this. Like,
don't do it. I don't want to get copyright strike.
You don't want to get copyright? Okay, well, look this clip up.
But look it up. It. There's no one in the world that sounds better, more like Kermit the Frog than whoever the fuck's doing it. It sounds awful.
Like, and all the comments say the same exact thing, and I agree. Like, everyone and their grandma can do a half-decent Kermit the Frog impression.
Right.
Which means that, like, you couldn't find someone who could do a great one.
It's
the worst Kermit I've ever heard.
I know. It's jarring. It's terrible. It's terrible. It's really bad. Not only does it not sound like his voice, I felt like it didn't feel like the character. He had a weird,
Yeah.
like, he didn't have the enthusiasm that I think Kermit should have.
Yeah, he wasn't playing it in the right tone. It
It
was
was
very,
super weird. Wrong
it was
sounding
weird,
Muppets.
and I'm glad that everyone was upset about it.
Me too. I hope they fucking get somebody. There's gotta be someone better out there.
But that's the
Gotta
thing.
be.
It's like I get it sometimes, like you need to like you have a long-running thing,
Yeah.
someone else has to take the voice over. But again, like
But look at like
everyone and their
Mickey.
fucking
They've
mom
been.
can do a half decent Kermit. Like,
Well, look at
you
like
can't.
Mickey. There's been, what, like 10 Mickeys? They've all been good. I can't think of any Mickey where I'm like, oh, that Mickey sucked. Like,
Yeah.
they look through the whole fucking world and they find somebody who could fucking do Mickey. Like, you
Like, you
couldn't
can't
do
get
that for
Kermit
Kermit the Frog?
to Kermit the Frog here. Like, you can't,
That was
like.
better. What you just did was better. Disney hire Vin Forte for the new Muppet Show.
And that's the thing too. That's all I think got like people's dander the most up is that it co them looking at that clip coincided with them also finding out that there's going to be some kind of new Muppet show, and it was like, oh no, if they're going to do this fucking voice,
I know
like.
it's like I was excited about it, but now I'm like, I mean, I'm gonna watch it. You know, I do think it's a good idea because, like, you know, Disney's tried a million times to reinvent the Muppets. I think it's a good idea to just do what worked in the first place. Just do the Muppet Show again.
Do the Muppet Show. Do it. Have them
Yeah.
do a goofy show where you can have celebrities come on. Like, that's what they do. That's what the Muppets exist for. The Muppets
Yeah.
literally exist for you to do that format of TV show.
Yeah. But going back to b before, yeah, same thing with game show host. Game show host is not as easy. A good game show host will make it look easy, but it's not
Yeah.
easy. You've got to keep it going. You've got to make the game work. You've got to be able to take in new information and react to it in real time. You've got to be funny and charming. It's
You
not
got to
easy
know
to
how to
be a game
work
show
with any
host.
kind of contestant that can walk through that door.
Yeah.
You need to know how to handle their situation without
Right.
making them look weird or bad, or like there's a whole host of communication-based skills
Yeah.
that you need to have.
Just, you know, I miss, like, I feel like game shows now try to look too cool. Like, I miss the sort of like burlesque, everything's golden and lit up game shows of like the 70s. Like, I love, like, the original Press Your Luck, like, with all the lights and shit. I love that. Or like the original Match Game. Like,
Yeah.
there's just all those lights everywhere. Like, I like that. Like I want to go back to that kind of look.
Yeah, do more of that. Even like again, like the Nickelodeon style ones. Like you're telling me you can't like a couple of years ago they rebooted Legends of the Hidden Temple on like the CW or something.
Yeah.
And
Did they?
they did it. I think it coincided with the start of COVID. So I
Oh,
think
that's
that's
not
why it
good.
didn't take off. But it was done like outdoors, and it looked very sanitized. It looked like someone did like a pop-up like Discovery Zone or Chuck E. Cheese, and it was like, what?
No. They also remember
Like give
Star
me the
Wars?
atmosphere. Put an atmosphere to the game show.
Yeah. Do you remember Star Wars tried to do that? Like, also, like, I think 2020? And it wasn't on Disney Plus, it was on StarWars.com. But it was called like Young Jedi Academy or whatever. And it was basically Legends of Hidden Temple, but Star Wars themed.
No.
Yeah, you can find them on YouTube. I'd never watched the full episode, but, you know, we don't remember it, so I guess it didn't do too well.
Yeah.
I do like game shows. I it's not the thing I go for, although I also don't really watch TV anymore. Every Halloween, I don't know if you call this a game show, but every Halloween, me and Jen will watch like Halloween Wars, which is like baking.
Oh yeah, the Food Network stuff.
Yeah. Or like there's a
That
pumpkin
stuff
carving
I like.
one. Like I like shit like that.
Yeah, like one of my favorite shows, like genuinely one of my favorite shows growing up was the original Iron Chef.
Yeah.
The
Yes.
original Iron Chef has so much fucking charm to it.
Yeah.
Remember the old Food Network?
Yeah, you know, there was a time, I've thought about doing a PCMC about this. There was a time from like 2005 to 2007, I was glued to the fucking. I was fucking watching Good Eats with Alton Brown. I was watching
Unwrapped.
Rachael Ray, like the, what was it, like $5 or less show or whatever the fuck that was?
$40 or less, like
Whatever.
$40 a
I was
day.
into it. I was into all that shit for a while, like super into it.
Yeah, like it's funny you mentioned Rachael Ray because there was like something going around the internet like a couple months ago where people were like, have you seen Rachel Ray today? It's like, yeah, she's like an almost 60-year-old woman. What are we talking about here?
But she has like a, I think she has like a daytime talk show.
Or she did. She had it for a year. I think it stopped recently, but people were like, doesn't she look different now? It's like, yeah, she's a little chubbier. And like, I'm like, yeah, because she's like a fucking 60-year-old woman now.
Yeah, I mean, it's not fair to do that to people.
But she was there. There was an era of Food Network where it was like the women on the Food Network were like, these were, it was like,
well,
these
that was Giada women. De Laurenti.
Giada De Laurentiis. Now she would be called a Nepo baby.
Yes, she was, for sure.
Oh, yeah, she was.
Her father was a movie producer.
You know, De Laurentiis. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then you had like Barefoot Contessa.
I was never into her. I something about her, like public access radio, like calmness always bothered me.
Yeah, and she always was like talking about her husband. I was like, well, where is this?
Yeah, story? Yeah. She would use the word tablescape a lot.
The funniest one to me, in retrospect, was Homemade with Sandra Lee.
Oh, I think I remember that.
Because you know what she went on to do, right?
No.
She, they're divorced now, but she married Andrew Cuomo.
Oh, okay. Interesting.
And then they got divorced. But she was the first lady of New York City for a little while.
Yeah.
But I don't know if you've ever seen the every holiday season, I like to dial it up. She does an episode where she makes a Kwanzaa cake.
Uh-huh.
And it's like, oh. don't do that.
That seems a little cultural appropriation.
Yeah, and she's like, oh, you just use this stuff from this. It's like, so she's doing it on the cheap because that's her thing.
What does it look like? Like, what? How does
not she... anything that just like an angel food cake with like.
Is that is cake in any way a real part of Kwanzaa celebrations, or did she just do it?
I think she just made it up.
Huh.
Because like her whole thing was like, oh, you don't need to buy expensive, which like I get the sentiment. But, like, looking back, all her clips are just like, yeah, just throw this fucking shit together. Like, ah, get this thing from the Dollar Tree and just fucking throw it in here. Like,
all right, I Googled it, and, you know, Google has AI now.
Yeah.
The Kwanzaa cake is an infamous, widely mocked, semi-homemade dessert created by Sandra Lee on her Food Network show. So, it's not a real thing.
No.
I'm looking at it. Oh, this is misguided.
Yeah.
Yeesh. Oh well. Vin, I think we ought to put this one to bed. We've pressed our luck on too much on this episode. Mm-hmm. Vin, do you have anything you want to plug?
Go watch Press Your Luck.
Go watch Press Your Luck, everybody. And go watch the 2016 Power Rangers. That's also got Elizabeth Banks in it. She's good.
Yeah.
I'm a fan of her Rita Repulsa.
They're still working on a sequel to that, right? Like,
no, they're rebooting. They're doing a Disney Plus show.
Oh, they are?
Yeah. And it's going to be the first Power Rangers show with all new footage. So
what have they been using? So this whole time,
yeah,
have there been shows going on concurrently in Japan that they've been pulling from?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
There's a billion seasons of Super Sentai and then a billion seasons of Power Rangers.
So it's literally, because I was never a huge Power Rangers fan, so it's literally, because I know the original one is they took the Sentai stuff and added stuff, but like they've been doing that for like 30 years. Like there's just been like Super Sentai has been going on time there's a new Super Sentai series.
No, it's not always one-to-one. Sometimes they'll pick an older thing. Sometimes they'll combine two things.
But they just like, they're like, hey, we've got new footage.
Yeah, basically. Yeah.
And then Haim Saban or whatever, like, gets it.
Yeah. Yep. That's how they did it. Well, we end every episode by saying
goodbye, bye.